As long as we imagine that we are both exceptional and indispensable in dealing with ISIS, we will fail.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we are talking with Gordon Adams. He's an emeritus professor of international studies from American University. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
In the latest Republican debate, the topic was U.S. foreign policy, and it was foreign policy, but most of the GOP candidates spent time talking about when they would deploy the military. When did foreign policy become basically synonymous with military intervention?
To some extent, it's been synonymous with it ever since the beginning of the Cold War. At the beginning of the Cold War, George Kennan, who wrote the famous long telegram and was staff for at the embassy in Moscow, basically said what we ought to be doing is containing the Soviet Union. That was 1947, when Paul Nitze in 1950 authored NSC 68, a famous memorandum setting out American strategy. He basically said, yes, we need to contain the Soviet Union, and the way we do it is with military capability. That was the point in time between that and the Korean War that we built up a very substantial military. And to some degree ever since then, the instinct in American policy has been to say the most useful tool to reach for to demonstrate American leadership, to demonstrate American commitment, to demonstrate the American capacity is our military capability. So since then we've had a significant military capability, and over time we've enlarged the arena of action of that capability into a lot of activities that aren't necessarily military.
Well, yeah, talk about that in a kind of 21st century context, because I mean we supposedly won the Cold War, and yet we're spending as much in terms of dollars as we ever were, and we've spent all of the 21st century essentially involved in two long wars, and we're barely getting started.
We are spending about $150 billion more in constant dollars than we spent in the Cold War average spending, including the Vietnam War and the Korean War periods. So we are spending at an unbelievably high rate for the military. But what are we spending it on? We have the world's largest military, the world's most capable military.
We not only spend the most on military spending, but how much more do we than, you know, the next 10 countries combined?
All of the next 10 countries combined don't reach the American defense budget. The Chinese defense budget is estimated to be somewhere between $120 and $180 billion in dollar terms. Not always a good comparison, but significantly less than the roughly $600 billion that we spend on our own military. So it's much larger. We also have the only military that is global, truly global. We can deploy anywhere, fly anywhere, sail anywhere. We have the only global logistics, transportation, communications, information, intelligence, basing infrastructure with over 800 military installations around the globe. There's no other military in the world that comes even close.
So where does it come in? Certainly this was on display in the Republican debate, and it crops up in Democratic debates. Hillary Clinton is a big supporter of military, of the military and of military action. But, you know, we're constantly being told we have fewer airplanes, you know, than George Washington had. We need to be spending more. All of our resources have been degraded.
Yeah, there's a typical mantra that happens roughly every 4 years, that is to say every presidential election season, about the weakness that the Democrats are accused of imposing on America's military forces, right? And so you will hear ersatz statistics. Yes, we have a 286-ship Navy. It's the smallest the Navy's been since the Second World War. True and irrelevant, both because the quality of the ships is substantially better than anything we deployed in the Second World War, and especially untrue because there's not another Navy in the world that comes close. In other words, you need the Navy. If you think you want a Navy, you want the Navy that you need to have, not the Navy of your wish list. The Navy that we have at 286 ships is the largest and most capable blue water Navy in the world, more than the Chinese, way more than the Russians, and nobody else matters.
Is this focus on the military, is it a sign or a kind of indication that so-called soft power, trade, cultural exchange, you know, kind of hectoring through media and whatnot, is just failed, or was it that that's really never been a serious part of our foreign policy?
What this country really doesn't have is an integrated foreign policy where the soft power tools matter. Mm-hmm. Institutionally, the Department of Defense is so much larger than the State Department or any foreign assistance agency we have, all wrapped into one, by a factor of 12 or 13 to 1 in budgetary terms, that they simply have an immense capability that no other institution has. So it's no wonder presidents constantly reach for the Defense Department when they want to demonstrate American power, American leadership, American intervention, American capability. They reach for the Department of Defense because it looks like the most organized, deployable, can-do institution of American foreign policy. And the State Department doesn't look like that. They don't move as quickly. They don't have as much demonstrable power. They don't have as much flexibility. They don't have additional people they can deploy. They don't have airplanes. There's a lot of things that the aid people and the State Department diplomatists can't do that the Defense Department will always come up on the net and say, yes, sir, can do, we'll do it.
Has the increase in the size of the military in terms of spending and reach and the willingness to use it, whether it's in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and Syria and you name it, has that made us safer as a nation?
It clearly has not made us safer. The biggest weakness, if you will, of most of the advocates, and they're in both parties, Democratic and Republican, whether you're a neocon, a conservative interventionist, or a liberal interventionist, the biggest disadvantage of using the military is threefold. One, we don't do it very well when we do it. Iraq and Afghanistan are cases in point, but if you go back in the history of the actual use of American military force, we've actually demonstrably won one conflict since the end of the Second World War, just one. And it was the 1991 intervention in the Gulf to throw the Iraqis out of Kuwait. It's the only one you can manifestly say, yep, went there, did that, pushed them out. What followed is another problem, but nonetheless, it's the only one. When we go in and ask the military to do civilian jobs, helping with government, doing economic development, social services, electric power stations.
This is nation building.
Nation building. Yeah. We fail. We manifestly fail. So the military comes up as the can-do institution and can't do it.
And is that because the military does a poor job at this, or it's just it's like asking the police to run to run the education system?
It's like asking the police to run the education system. It's the biggest problem is the problems are twofold. One, the military doesn't have the cultural knowledge to know how to do this in any other country. And two, they don't have the core competences to govern, do electric power, institute business investment, all those things that they say that they were going to do in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're not competent to do it. So we fail. The consequence of that failure for American national security is manifold. In Iraq, we can see it. By failing to do it, we end up with ISIS.
Is there a way to use soft power to either contain or counteract ISIS, or is it something now that we're faced with a apparent military threat there, you got to go in and blow it up?
The conundrum here is that as long as we imagine that we are both exceptional and indispensable in dealing with ISIS, we will fail. Mm-hmm. Because where that we are indispensable, it's got to be us thing goes, is major American military intervention. I'm not saying that's not something that we could do. But the blowback consequences of doing that in the region, as we've already seen in Iraq and Afghanistan, are enormous. In other words, we do exactly what the Greeks called tragedy. In trying to do what we think is the right thing, we absolutely inevitably end up with more enemies, more blowback, and a worse reputation. So it's a counterproductive strategy. And until we realize that we're not exceptional, and that we can't simply by saying frog cause other countries and their peoples and their movements to jump, we're going to keep making that same mistake over and over and over again. But it is no longer useful for our national security.
Well, we will leave it there. Thank you so much, Gordon Adams.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Gordon Adams. He's an emeritus professor from American University. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Pleasure.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.